Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello and welcome. Joining me today to share the stories behind the 10 books that inspired her the most on her life journey is a broadcaster, speaker, and author who's been a committed agent of transformation for thousands of people over the past 35 years. Joanne Reid Rodriguez was born and raised in Glasgow, Scotland, where she grew up with a passion for teaching. Having been obese and often unwell with a binge eating disorder when she was young, she not only transformed her life and founded a highly successful Slimming Together program, but also became a writer for the Sunday Post, Scotland's best-selling Sunday newspaper. A spiritual awakening in her 30s led Joanne to Los Angeles, where she taught her program at Agape International Spiritual Center, led by Michael Bernard Beckwith. She studied nutrition and advanced stress management, gained professional qualifications in science-based nutrition and cognitive behavioral therapy, and she now specializes in trauma, stress, and eating disorders. We'll hear a little bit more about Joanne's spiritual journey and her programs that help people take their spiritual development to the next level a little later in the show. For now, let's meet Joanne Reid Rodriguez. Joanne, welcome.
Hello. So nice to be here.
It's so lovely to hear your accent. It is such a beautiful accent.
Thank you. Thank you.
I bet you hear that all the time, don't you?
Well, when I was living out in Los Angeles, it wasn't the first time somebody said, honey, I don't want to talk to you. I just want to listen.
Yeah. It is a very musical accent, I think.
Oh. Well, I'm quite a musical person, Sandy. I love to sing, and I do love music. I'm really quite a musical person. So, it's interesting that you hear that in my speaking voice.
Definitely. Okay, so, I mean, you've said that you've read countless books over the years. Most are enjoyable, but only a few touched your soul. Yes. And of that few, we have 10 with us today. Yes. That you'll be sharing. So was it just 10 that touched your soul? Were there a few more that you had to kind of put to one side?
There probably were, but written by some of the authors in my list.
So I see.
I tend to sort of find a voice that I resonate with and sort of trust that voice. I
would say, yes, there were other books, but by the same authors as the ones I've chosen. So your list is pretty in chronological order. So we'll get to hear about your life journey as we go through the list as well, which is always good. Sometimes they're not in chronological order. Doesn't really matter. We still get to hear about people's life journeys, which are always fascinating. So your first book is, this is the first time it's appeared on anybody's list in 2 years. It is a classic, I think, and deserves a comeback. It is Love is Letting Go of Fear by Gerald Jampolsky, which was published in 1979. When did you first read that book?
I can tell you exactly, it was 30 years ago, because I was 29 and I'm 59 now. So it was 30 years ago I first read it, and of course, coming up toward the end of my 20s. Well, my 20s, my 20s were turbulent. A lot of just growing up, Sandy, and it took me a little while to sort of find my my path in life. And I think a few sort of turbulent dramas, and quite frankly, of most of my own making, not realizing that I had the power to choose my state of mind. It just seemed to me that turbulence was the natural state. And of course, in my teens and early 20s, yes, I'd had binge eating disorder. And of course, all eating disorder, you know, we talk about eating disorders, but they are predominantly psychological. And this inner battle with not understanding one's worth or one's value. And I was a very, very lucky girl growing up because I had wonderful parents. I had a very stable upbringing, parents who loved one another as well as myself and my sister. So I had a lot of stability, and I was a wanted child. And I had a good education. I mean, I had a lot that was working for me, but it was my relationship with myself. And then, of course, the path to find my value, my worth. And that is what triggered the binge eating disorder and all of this. So that kind of carried through into my 20s. And by the time I was 29, I was finding the turbulence quite exhausting. And it was a chap who's actually gone on to become quite a good friend. He said at the time, there's a wonderful book called A Course in Miracles, and I think you should read it. And I said, okay, I'll purchase that. And he said, well, yeah, but it is a bit deep. So there's another smaller publication that kind of goes with it, but it's an easier introduction. And that, of course, was Love is Letting Go of Fear. And I'm so glad, because at 29, I wasn't ready for A Course in Miracles. I read it much later in life. But I just love Jan Polsky. Again, it was that immediate trust. I just trusted the voice of the author. And he broke things down into simple, easy to digest, bite-sized chunks. And you know, Sandy, at 29, it was the first time that the concept of I could choose peace, I could create peace, really? I had never realized that until that book. And so it was kind of wonderful. It opened a door for me.
So would you say that it was a revelation to you? You know, or was it just a comforting holding, giving you the confidence to do something?
Well, it was definitely the introduction of a new way of thinking to me, and you know, choosing peace. And I think one of the biggest takeaways from that book, and I've never forgotten it, and even sometimes now, if I'm a little out of balance, I still go back to that one teaching, that if you are not experiencing peace in the moment, you have somehow chosen the wrong thought. What are you dwelling on that's creating within you a turbulent force or a negative force? Because obviously, as you think, so you are. That right there is the crux of cognitive behavioral therapy. And it really sort of, it's much easier to become aware of how you feel than all these thoughts that, of course, are being processed. But if you are feeling a little icky or out of balance, I can always just sort of remember that and obviously with practice over the years, that comes more quickly, you know, that I'm just able to look, what am I thinking about? What am I irritated by or whatever, and I don't have to be. And it's wonderful to know how you can just pivot.
Yeah. And it is.
He talks a lot about forgiveness, and you know, he has that other wonderful small publication. This is what I love about him. He keeps everything small and simple. He doesn't sort of like go on for forever, but he keeps everything small, simple, and very succinct. And I love that quote, forgiveness and healing is giving up all hope of having had a better past.
That's a good one.
Isn't it?
That is a good one.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very simple, very direct. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of those I was about to say, and you've just, you know, introduced it, that there are those moments when you read a book and something is expressed so exquisitely.
Yes.
That everything stops while you process it, and then everything's changed after you've processed
it. Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. And I've had those moments also.
Yeah. So book number two you read when you were 32. Your mum had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's at a very early age, and it was pretty devastating. How did Way of the Peaceful Warrior, a book that changes lives by Dan Millman, published in 1980. How did that book come into your hands?
Well, I can remember at the time I was a member of a book club, but it wasn't particularly a spiritual book club. And I got the catalogue and I was browsing through for more books. And I remember distinctly seeing the little feature, the write-up, and it was something about the book cover. There was a moment where it was like this. I remember a feeling, and I sort of read it through and kind of noted the feeling, but didn't order the book. And it was sometime later, as I say, my mother, when she was only 53 years old, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And at that time, Sandy, Alzheimer's was not the household name it is today. Actually, at that particular time, there were a lot of GPs who didn't know what Alzheimer's was. This was just a very new word that was creeping into the vocabulary. And somebody, a friend who'd been sort of traumatized by the death of her sister, also very young, gave me a book, and it was a book that was a channeled work written by somebody quite local to where I was living. And I read that and really liked it and went to our local, shall we say, metaphysical bookstore. And I wanted to buy another copy of this to give to someone else. And when I was buying this other book, the chap who owned the bookstore said, "Oh, Joanne, if you like that book, I really think you would like this book." And he held it up, and there it was again. And it was that book cover, and I got that feeling. And I said, "Oh, Steve, okay, I'll take it now." "Oh, no," he said, I wasn't trying to sell you." I said, "No, honestly, I've seen this book before. No, I'll take that book." And anyway, my husband was driving. I started reading the book in the car. By the time I got home, I was hooked, and I finished that book within 24 hours. And Sandy, when I finished Way of the Peaceful Warrior, I said to my husband, "Zach, I'm going to San Francisco. Would you like to come?" What do you mean?" I said, "Well, this book is amazing, and I want to meet this man, and there's a courage training, and I want to do the courage training." And my husband said, "Okay, well, sure, I'll come to San Francisco with you. I'm not going to do the training, but, you know, I'll find a nice spa hotel nearby." But yeah, Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And actually, when I think about it now, Sandy, on the first page, halfway through the first page, Dan had me hooked. I had California, I had university, I had Berkeley, I had it all within the first three paragraphs, and I was in.
And he has become quite pivotal in your life.
There's no question about it, because I did go out it was a Sonoma north of San Francisco, and I did the courage training. I think that was 1996. And gosh, I was so looking forward to it. And it was truly, actually, even looking back over my life now, that still stands out as one of the beautiful highlights. But the one thing that I wasn't sort of expecting at all, that I didn't give it any thought before going out there to the training, was just how many fabulous people would also be attending. And I met so many amazing people that are actually still in touch with me today. But the courage training was just, it was absolutely wonderful. And I love Dan. I mean, from the moment I saw him coming into the room, I just knew, yeah, you're somebody that I trust. And actually, even in my early to mid 30s, I was quite a feisty, independent soul. And I didn't give my trust too easily, you know, but immediately I trusted him and his teachings. And yeah, he did. He became a great mentor. And then the following year, I went back out and did his metamorphosis training. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I actually attended his final metamorphosis training in 1997. And again, met a lot of people. I met a guy there who was an attorney at law. And he said to me, you know, I really feel a strong connection with you, and I would like to introduce you to my wife. And, you know, if ever I can be of any assistance. Well, it's kind of funny. Later, when I went out to California, my husband and I actually, for quite a period of time, house shared with that particular chap and his wife. And she was the first one to take me out on the freeways driving. And so it was just, you know, in life, Sandy, some things are just meant.
Yeah.
And Way of the Peaceful Warrior, there is no question. That was really part of my path. And I think it was written before it actually, you know, some things are just meant to be.
It's part of many people's lives. Certainly it was one of those standout books for me.
Yeah.
I made it one of my bookworm. Well, in fact, I made it Dan's entire body of work my bookworm, because I couldn't really choose between them. But that particular book, it was a standout. And still today, I recommend it. This is how much Joanne likes Dan's books. Book number three is another one of Dan's books. It's No Ordinary Moments, A Peaceful Warrior's Guide to Daily Life. What is it about that book that you like?
Well, I remember the excitement I felt when a great package, and because I'd read Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and then, of course, Sacred Journey of the Peaceful Warrior. And what I was finding, and I read these books, including No Ordinary Moments, all before I went out and actually met Dan. But what I was actually finding, Sandy, was that as I was going out on my power walks and just spending time in nature, my mind was constantly going back to these books and to these teachings and how it was beginning to take me out of what I would have called until that point, really until I read the Jampolsky book, I was coming out of automatic pilot living, and I was actually starting to nurture what I would call the inner life and really shift my thinking. And also, as a result of that, my priorities were sort of beginning to shift as well. And so after the Sacred Journey of the Peaceful Warrior, I went on to Peaceful Warrior Services. Of course, no websites back then. This was all done by mail order or phone or whatever, and things seemed to take a bit longer. And I remember ordering cassette tapes and books and whatever it was, and coming back that particular day, and there was a big box, and it was like a 5-year-old at Christmas. Mm-hmm. But No Ordinary Moments, I really loved, because all of a sudden this was now how I could be a peaceful warrior, how I could shift my thinking and behavior and adapt my lifestyle. And yes, I just loved the way that it was written. And the other interesting thing about that book, I can distinctly remember at the beginning of it, there was a generous paragraph introducing the editor. a woman by the name of Nancy Grimley Carlton. And that was a really funny thing, because I remember thinking, oh gosh, this lady sounds lovely, feels lovely. I just love the energy of everything here. That particular book, the one big takeaway for me at that time, I was moving toward vegetarianism. But what I loved about Dan's teaching in that book, he was guiding the reader. If you are interested in vegetarianism, you can just simply eat less meat, eat less chicken, eat less fish. And suddenly it was just like, ah, so gentle. I can just do, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I can just transition. And I was very lucky because my lovely husband, Zach, he was the first one who said, no meat. No, I don't want, this is not necessary and I don't want it. So together we gave up all red meat and including processed meat and that kind of thing. And then we gave up chicken and then seafood, shellfish and all of that. But it was just, there was something very gentle, but I just absolutely loved how, you know, it was suddenly my guide to becoming a peaceful warrior. Because the interesting thing is, Sandy, even as a young child growing up in Glasgow, believe me, when I'm telling you, when I was 5 years old, 7 years old, I knew that God existed. I knew that I was part of something greater, but I couldn't fit, nothing that I had experienced by way of going into a church or whatever, the energy just did not resonate with me. But when I met Dan Millman through his books, I just knew this is like a hand in a glove, this fits. And if I may just say, much later on, Dan encouraged me to write my own books. And he said, I'm going to introduce you to Nancy Grimley Carlton. And so isn't it funny that I actually, in no ordinary moments, it wasn't just Dan, but I connected also with Nancy. And then wonderful, wonderful Nancy, with the passing of time, became my editor also. So yeah, it's kind of funny, isn't it, that energy.
Yeah, you know that there's this, you know, line of connection that just goes on and on and on. And we don't always see it, you know, but every now and then it will bubble up and show us something really meaningful. And such a generous thing for Dan to do.
Yeah.
But he is a very generous man. I mean, I've had the opportunity to interview him a number of times, and I'm always looking for authenticity. And, he's got it.
Oh, he has.
No question.
He absolutely has. And I recognized this when I first went to Westerbeek Ranch in Sonoma to do the courage training. I sat back and I observed how he interacted with the people that were there. He was there for the people. There is no, and whatever Dan gave, he gave extra. He didn't just give you the cake, he gave you the cream on top of it. He always pushed the extra mile to make sure the student got it.
You know, it's an interesting point that you're highlighting here, is that, you know, a lot of us, I mean, we learn so much from books, and we rarely get to meet the authors. So we have to, you know, follow our own inner guidance as to who this person is and how much of what they're teaching am I willing to accept as truth. And it's really important that we do have people who we can trust, because if we're going to listen to those teachings and follow those teachings, we have to be absolutely certain about the person who's doing the teaching. They've got to embody it as well.
And I think that was the thing I noticed with Dan straight away. And what I loved, if you sort of think, Sandy, we come out of the 80s, and the 80s were, I mean, I was in my 20s in the 80s, and of course the 80s were all about Dynasty and the big shoulder pads. Well, I've got a sort of big shoulders myself today, but you know what I mean? It was all about power dressing and wealth and all of this. And then, of course, well, mid the 90s were a bit like that as well. And then Dan was just like so simple. So there was nothing ostentatious. He was so simple. And I loved it. You know, I loved it. And I loved his commitment to his family. And that was also very authentic. And there's no question. It was a path for me that was definitely right for me and still is.
Mm, good. Well, before this turns into a Dan Millman love fest, we need to move on. Book number four is Living Buddha, Living Christ by Thich Nhat Hanh, published in 1997. So quite a different book than the ones that we've been talking about. So tell us how this came into your life and the impact it made.
Well, again, you know, I could have selected a number of books by Thich Nhat Hanh and the Vietnamese Buddhist monk. I just felt that, again, he writes with childlike simplicity and makes complicated things very easy to digest. I also think, Sandy, that something I recognise is that when you really are in the presence of greatness and truth, there is very little or even no ego. There's very, very, very little ego. And Thich Nhat Hanh, I think, really fits that description. Now, the reason this book was very important to me was obviously growing up in Glasgow. I was born in the early 60s, grew up 60s, 70s. And sectarianism was rife. It still is an issue in many parts of the world today. And my parents were very wise, and they protected my sister and me from religion. We were not a religious family. And I didn't realize why until I grew up. And what had transpired was that when my parents married in the 1950s, my father was from a Protestant family, my mother was from a Catholic family, and never the twain shall meet and marry. But oh my goodness, apparently, you know, this caused quite a, quite a kerfuffle. And anyway, but they did love one another very much, and they were very devoted partners, my parents. And but the arguments were not, even though they were very young themselves, the arguments were not something they were willing to have anything to do with. And so they just made a decision. We'll have nothing to do with religion here, but if we're blessed with children, we shall just raise them in an environment that's respectful and loving and teach them good manners and good values. And do you know, it was a tremendous gift because I was allowed to find my own path. And as I was saying to you, even as a little child, I was aware that I was part of something bigger. And I always had this, even as a child, Sandy, at Christmas, it was about much more for me than just presents, although that was lovely too. But words like Bethlehem and baby Jesus, I used to, as a little child, find myself being very excited just by the thought. And I knew there was something much greater. And with my Slimming Together program that I've been happily teaching for over 30 years, back in the 1990s, I had been a long-standing resident in a sort of church hall that was owned by a Christian church. And, I liked everyone there and everyone there liked me. And I just came and went and did my classes and was a very good tenant and friend to all. And then one day I was teaching a workshop, and in the sort of the promotional poster for it, I mentioned the word karma. Well, I cannot tell you what a reaction I got from this. And I got a call to say, you're going against the teachings of Christ. And I was incredibly confused. And I said, no, I really don't think I am. Yes. And this big religious argument broke out. And I said, no, I have to, I'm sorry, but I really have to leave. This is not a comfortable situation for me. But reading this particular book by Thich Nhat Hanh, it gave me, as a young woman in my 30s, the validation that I kind of needed after that experience, because I was actually quite hurt by it at the time, but it gave me the validation. And the one thing I always remembered was Thich Nhat Hanh saying, the great masters recognize one another. They drink from the same cup. It's the students across the world who argue and fight in their name, but the great masters recognize one another. And truthfully, if you are a very good Christian, then you are by default a very good Buddhist, yeah, and a very good Hindu, and a very, yeah, good. So for me, I did never like that sectarianism. To be perfectly honest with you, even today, as we all know, wars have been fought in the name of God. As Yogananda says, Jesus Christ was crucified once, but his teachings have been crucified every day ever since. And, yeah, you know, I just really believe in unity consciousness. And I don't like sectarianism. I think it's really just an excuse to fight, actually, yeah, an excuse, yeah, to argue. And so that particular book was really quite beautiful. And of course, I read many of Thich Nhat Hanh's books, and just a beautiful writer, teacher. Again, very simple. Doesn't,
beautiful soul.
Doesn't overstretch a point, you, yeah, know? Beautiful.
Yeah. So number five, another beautiful soul, Answers by Mother Meera. Yes. And she did a part one in 1991 and a part two in 1997. Yes. And I think you went to receive Darshan from Mother Meera in Germany in your 30s.
I did, with my husband and my sister. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to remember, when did we go? I'm pretty sure I had read Answers before I went. So it's probably around, oh no, now a memory just comes to mind. I remember when I went to Dan Millman's Metamorphoses training, that was 1997. And shortly after that, I was able to give some photographs of Mother Meera to my fellow peaceful warriors who had done that training. So again, it must have been around 1997. Mm-hmm. And we went to Germany with a group. I met a chap called Simon Trusselli, and a very charismatic chap. And he was taking a group from Jersey, where I now live in the Channel Islands, in the UK, and he was taking a group on coach to Germany, and he had been to Mother Meera to receive Darshan a number of times, and we went, honestly, Sandy, not knowing what to expect, and it was truly a wonderful experience. And the interesting thing is, my sister, my husband and I, we decided that after the darshan, because everything is done in silence, and we decided that we would then go back to the hotel and share our experiences of it. But the interesting thing is, after the darshan, we were all dumbstruck and we couldn't say a word. Nobody could speak.
Yeah. So you returned and you went back a few times, didn't you?
Yes. I went back again, and on each occasion, we were able to receive two darshans. So I received four in all. But the first time we went, you know, there's reserved seating at the front, and nobody sits there. But it was a very interesting thing. Mother Meera has a lady that's been her companion and her right hand since the very beginning. And that lady is Adilakshmi, and Adilakshmi is very much in charge, and almost, you know, she's almost like a mother superior. There's no nonsense when Adilakshmi is present. You know, you're sort of standing to attention. And as we were going in, she looked at me and she looked at my sister. And then, and this is something that my sister also remembers, Ada Lakshmi looked at my husband, Zach, who I think is a pretty special soul. And she looked at my husband, Zach, and this broad smile broke out on her face. And she then looked at my sister and myself, and she just pointed, 1, 2, 3, you come with me. And she put us in the front row. And there we were, and Mother Meera came in. And it's very difficult to find the words. She's just like a heavenly queen. Beautiful is too small a word, but it's not an earthly beauty. That it, there was just something magnificent in a very quiet way. But I do feel that it changed me in many ways, and I'm still very devoted to Mother Meera now, and would love to have another darshan at some time. I felt almost, Sandy, it would be a little greedy to go back for more and more, you know, when there are so many other souls who need. But after 20 years, if I'm able to return, I certainly would love to. But wonderful, wonderful.
I like the way you ended your description about this. You said you love Mother Meera's guidance to go directly to God. She tells us all religions are rivers that lead to the ocean. Go yes. directly to the ocean.
Go directly. And again, as I was saying earlier, when you touch truth, there is no ego. No. And that is another thing that the question was put to her, who am I? And she says, lose the I and you will know.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. But, you know, when you read her answers, there's no drama, there's no... And also somebody had said, I see you in visions, I see you somehow appearing. And she said, you might want to get that checked out. Some people have hallucinations. Go there, you know. And I just love, she's so grounded and loving. There is no judgment, there is just love. I love it.
Okay, so book number 6, The Second Coming of Christ, yes. The Resurrection of the Christ Within You. By Paramahansa Yogananda.
Well, it's a big book. I mean, I think, in fact, it's so big they had to publish it in 2 volumes, 1,500 pages. And again, it goes back to the whole sectarianism thing. And all my life, I prayed, actually, Sandy, I would pray and say, you know, I really, really, I don't want religious arguments. I don't want going through the Christian Bible, cherry picking this and that, and what I want to understand. I want my understanding to expand. I want, you know, any shadow to diminish. I want to suffer less. I want to have more love, more compassion. And I want to understand. And I really, really, really want to understand the teachings of Jesus at a deep level. And that was a prayer, you know, that I used to put out quite a lot. And one day, well, of course, when I was living in Los Angeles, I spent a lot of time at the Agape International Spiritual Center with Michael Beckwith and all the fabulous people that were there. And I know that you've spent a lot of time at Agape, and you probably remember the gorgeous Quiet Mind bookstore. And well, I spent a lot of time and a lot of money in the Quiet Mind bookstore. I just used to love to go in there and treat myself to another great book. And honestly, Sandy, this one day I went in, and I actually quite chuckle when I remember, as I walked in on a stand, I saw it there, The Second Coming of Christ, you know, a discourse by Yogananda. And as I saw it, I was like, it's like at this mad moment of, it's almost like time froze and I couldn't get to it, you know. And then I went and I picked it up and thought, oh my gosh, I can't be carrying this around. So Michael's lovely mother, Alice Beckwith, she said, well, you know, I think we better keep it for you here and you can pick it up after the service today. But of course, Yogananda, the wonderful avatar who brought the teachings of yoga from India to the West. And again, when I was in LA, I spent a great deal of time at Lake Shrine on Sunset Boulevard, just a beautiful, beautiful place for self-realization fellowship teachings. And so Yogananda, the beautiful avatar, he actually said that Jesus appeared to him and worked with him on this 1500 page volume. And I can quite understand how it would be that perhaps some individuals might think to themselves, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. But actually when you start reading it, oh, it's profound. It is so deep. And again, no ego, it's just beautiful. It's intelligent, it's deep. And it's, I just love it. But it is the kind of book that it takes a long time to read, you know. And but what I loved particularly about that is Yogananda goes into Jesus's lost years, because in our Christian Bible, we only know of Jesus up to the age of 12, and then from 30 to 33. And there's a whole 18-year period. Now, obviously, in India, there are sacred ancient transcripts documenting Jesus's time in India and in Tibet. And Yogananda tells some wonderful stories about Jesus as a boy. And they're an absolute joy, an absolute joy. And for me, nourishment for the soul. So that book was almost an answered prayer, and just wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, number seven, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, yes. Which turns up again and again and again, and rightly so.
Yes, and I'm sort of glad to hear it, because it's not the kind of book that one thinks of as a spiritual book. Yeah. It's sort of hailed as a very important work of psychology. And in fact, studying PTSD, you know, trauma, the after effects of trauma and stress, actually, I can see that Man's Search for Meaning was really the blueprint for a lot of the study and what goes on in stress management and PTSD. And of course, we call it post-traumatic stress disorder, but it's not a disorder. It's a perfectly natural thing. If someone has had a tremendous trauma, or they've witnessed violence, or they've, you know, it, how can we really call it a disorder? As Viktor Frankl says in this particular book, an abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation is a very normal thing.
Yes.
And of course, isn't it? So we, how do we call it a disorder? Because we call everything a disorder. That's just the society we live in. But having said this, obviously, well, for people that don't know the book, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl spent over 3 years in Auschwitz. He was in his 20s, and he was himself a doctor of psychiatry, and he survived. He survived almost the unsurvivable, you know, and he came out of that. And the interesting thing is, he wanted to write this manuscript anonymously. He didn't want his name to be attached to this manuscript. But then, of course, he was persuaded, you know, you really have to identify yourself. Otherwise, this manuscript is just going to get lost, and it's not going to have the... So he did, and had no way of knowing that it would go on to sell many millions of copies. And there are so many takeaways from that. And what I loved about this particular account of time in Auschwitz by a survivor was that, well, of course, he did tell some of the stories of horrendous things that happened, but he didn't dwell too much on that. What he was really writing this book for was actually to show that even in the most abhorrent circumstances, and I really related to this as a Glaswegian, Sandy, he said, people wouldn't believe this, but actually even in the most abhorrent circumstances, it was possible to have a sense of humor. We did actually find ourselves laughing at things that nobody would ever believe we could laugh at. And Glaswegians have a tremendous sense of humor. Yeah. We laugh at ourselves all the time. And we laugh at life and the ridiculous predicaments of the human story, that this is sort of, you know, the Glaswegian way. And of course, as many of your viewers will know, Billy Connolly, or Sir Billy Connolly, who's made an absolute legend out of himself just simply telling the Glasgow story as it is. And that was how it was. He was able to take that onto the world stage. But that's actually how it is for Glaswegians. We have this sense of humor. When life was tough, although obviously I'm not comparing anything that people in Glasgow went through to Auschwitz. I mean, how nothing compares to that. But I understood that he said, and humor, of course, becomes a coping mechanism. But he also said, and this I think is a very important thing, he said it is possible to live a principled life even in these circumstances. Yeah. And he spoke about the importance of connecting with nature, the people who could, even in this horror and suffering, look at the sunset and see something beautiful and be reminded in the soul that there is something beyond this.
Yes.
So I think there were so many takeaways. And the thing about Man's Search for Meaning, it's not a big publication. I think it's about 130 pages. So, you know, we can read it in a couple of days. But what I also liked as well is that he doesn't believe in random suffering, and that even in the utmost suffering, that there is purpose and there is reason. And I believe this, and I think we have to believe this, because otherwise, how could we possibly believe in a God? How could we truly believe that God is love if there was such a thing as random suffering, and that there is meaning, whether that is through experience to become stronger, to become more compassionate, more understanding. But I absolutely believe that there is meaning. And of course, the other thing in that is that it gives us a sense of perspective, the things that we think we're suffering yes. about, when you yes. actually look at that, you know. So
absolutely. It's,
and to me, although that particular book isn't always thought of as a spiritual book, but for goodness sake, what wow. is more spiritual than coming through something like that with your soul intact? I think that is, you know, it's an important yeah. book.
Very important. We're going to have to kind of shorten our descriptions now okay. because we are almost running out of time. We've got three more books. We've got book number 8, The Heart of the Soul, Emotional Awareness yeah. by Gary Zukav.
Yeah. Well, I love this one. And of course, Gary Zukav is most famous for The Seat of the Soul.
Yes.
So this came after, and it's one of the sort of, you know, spin-offs from The Seat of the Soul. But I love this because Gary Zukav in this book encapsulates the spiritual connection with all addictions, dysfunctions, disorders, all the things that, you know, all these labels. But I really believe that everything physical has its origin in that which is non-physical. And it comes back, I think, Sandy, to our worth, our value. And when we feel that we haven't that self-worth, the value. That's when all of these sort of other behaviors kick in. But I love that he goes in this book beyond eating disorders or alcohol or maybe promiscuity, etc. But he also talks about perfectionism or workaholism, or, you know, these kind of, yeah, when we talk of addiction, we think
the acceptable addictions.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And I, again, Gary Zukav is a trusted voice, and he's a pretty grounded, authentic voice. So that is anyone working in my field, where they're working, as, you know, whether that is in therapy, in counselling, anything like that, I think this is a really important book, The Heart of the Soul.
The Heart of the Soul. So, book number 9, we're back to Dan Millman, because he has just published his memoir, which people have been waiting a long time for, including me, Peaceful Heart, Warrior Spirit. And you've got this on your list pretty darn quickly, because it was only released a few weeks ago.
I know. And I did want to put it on my list because I was able to have an advanced copy of it. So although it's only just out, but I actually read it a little while back. And I wanted to include this, again, because of Dan's authenticity. But what I really loved about it was that he was willing to just put out there his own journey of when he himself was finding his way and when he was a student. So, I mean, all along, I was never filled, Sandy. I don't know about yourself, but I was never filled. I knew from the very beginning that Socrates was really Dan. I always knew that. I never sort of thought, Dan created Socrates, the great mentor in the original Way of the Peaceful Warrior. So I always knew that. And that Dan, you know, obviously created this alter ego, shall we say, to sort of...
The way I like to look at it, because I didn't know that Socrates was Dan when I first read the book back, you know, soon after it was published. But I think I like to look at it, it was the future Dan. It was Dan, it was what Dan had in him that he wasn't going to find for many years, but it was coming up as Socrates to hold up a mirror to him.
Describing it, actually, I like that. Yeah. That is it. And of course, for Peaceful Warrior fans, I hope I'm not giving too much of a spoiler, but Socrates makes a very delightful return. And in this book, I think it's the only one of Dan's books that Joy, Dan's wife, who features so predominantly in his books, but that Joy actually gives her account as well. And I think it just ties up a lot of ends. And, well, of course, I particularly loved when he was writing about Michael Bookbinder, because that was the courage training, the knife fighting with the rubber knives. Yeah. And I was just able to relive that fabulous experience at Westerbeek. And I think it is, you know, really an important book, and one that I couldn't let slip by from my selection.
Yeah, well, I always like it when someone is courageous enough to say, you know, I'm going to let my wife comment here, and I'm not going to edit that. I'm just going to let her give her perspective, which could well be a different perspective than the one the author's trying to share.
Yeah, that's right. And but I think they've worked very closely, from what I know, I think Joy has been a sort of she will sort of read and sort of help Dan shape his manuscripts, or, you know, and it's really, everybody needs that close person. who will say, "Ugh, no, you didn't say that correctly," or "Oh no, cut, that's a drama, cut that out," you know. And I think, you know, she's worked very closely with him, and it was just for the reader who's followed the saga all the way along, it really was just a delight, and dare I even say a joy.
There you go. Yes. How can he top that one? So book number 10, Autobiography of a Yogi by Yogananda. Again, another book that probably comes up, the most frequently.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolute feast for the soul. But what I love about this as well is Yogananda's way of writing his own memoir. And it's a feast for language lovers. And it's actually quite funny. It made me laugh on quite a few occasions. But oh my goodness, I just loved this book. And again, you know, when you're reading Yogananda, and I've read quite a few of his books, I mean, there were other ones that I could have selected as well. But when you're reading Yogananda, it's honestly, I think, hard to better that. It's just hard to better it, because you are really tapping into the heart and soul and mind of a true master. You really are. And of course, Yogananda's own guru, Sri Yukteswar, I just loved it. And I love, Sandy, the whole lineage of Krishna, Jesus Christ, Babaji, Lahiri Mahashai, Swami Sri Yukteswar, and Paramahansa Yogananda. And I love the lineage. And what I love about it so much is that Jesus Christ is a part of that. And again, if I may stress, I am not remotely religious. I have no affiliation with any religion. I just have unity consciousness. And I just know in my heart when something is right. And Yogananda, for me, that is just so right. And I particularly love when Sri Yukteswar, there's a chapter called The Resurrection of Sri Yukteswar, where he is describing the astral worlds. And it's beautiful. I just love it.
Well, there's your 10 books. And what's very clear is that the words peace and heart come up again and again in the titles and in what you say about those books and what they've given you.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt, yes. And it's just a way for me, it's nourishment. I mean, as a nutritionist, I often say to people, good nutrition isn't just about the healthy food or the vitamin pill you take in from the outside. It's about the good thoughts, and we have to feed the mind with those good thoughts. Goodness knows there's enough of the other side of life that we actually have to take the time to nourish the mind and the heart. Mm-hmm. And I just look upon that as nourishment for the soul. And my daily reading, whether it is Yogananda or going back to one of the Dan Millman books, Everyday Enlightenment is another favorite of Dan Millman's. Whether it is a Dan Millman or whether it's Yogananda or Mother Meera or Thich Nhat Hanh, that is just nourishment for the soul.
So what are you reading now?
Actually, I'm still reading Yogananda. I'm still reading my way through the second book in Second Coming of Christ. And the one that I've got lined up for after that is Yogananda's breakdown on the Bhagavad Gita, or the story of Krishna and Arjuna. Yes. But the lovely thing, in the Second Coming of Christ, he refers to that quite a lot, and he will actually show you the harmony in the teachings, which I just love, because again, it is anything that will wash away sectarianism, I'm all for that.
So in the little time we have left, tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing, and tell us a little bit about your books.
Oh, my own books. Well, the two books that I have written and had published, one is called Life Transformation Diet, It's nutrition and good thoughts for the mind. And of course, you know, I know that word diet is very controversial, but it actually etymologically comes from the ancient Greek dieta, which means way of life or habitual manner of living. And that is the foundation on which I teach, way of life. That was the first one. And then the second, Slim, Happy and Free. And this is really my own journey and me teaching the reader through my own experiences of working through and healing my own life from binge eating disorder. Although that particular book seems to be very popular with all sorts of people who will say to me, you don't have to have a weight issue to enjoy this. So those are my two books. And I also, Sandy, teach a course called Authentic Confidence. I was able to register authenticconfidence.com. I think it was back in 2008. It was just as I was returning from a long period of time in Los Angeles. And Authentic Confidence, I thought, well, this is a wonderful platform for how my work is now moving in a much more spiritual direction. And so all my writings for Authentic Confidence are currently as modules that are forming a course that I teach, Authentic Confidence. And do you know what my tagline is for that? Your worth is beyond debate. That's it. Your worth is beyond debate. It is all about, you see, when we know our own value, we absolutely know the value of others as well. Yes. And that's, to me, is the heart of everything. Your worth is beyond debate. So we don't do anything to improve ourselves or fix ourselves, but to honor ourselves from that knowing that our worth is beyond debate. So that's really my work. And it's really anything I can do to encourage others. That is my raison d'etre, to encourage. That, I think, is if all I do and all I achieve in this life is encouraging others, that will make me very happy.
So just tell our listeners, our viewers, where they can check out your programs, your books and your work.
Oh, thank you. Well, my website, so my name is Joanne Reed Rodriguez, but of course, Reed Rodriguez, there are so many opportunities to misspell that. I have joannerr.com. So that's the simplest, joannerr.com. And of course, authenticconfidence.com. That will all come into my website, and my books are available there. Authentic Confidence, later this year, I will be teaching as an online course and actually sending the course modules out. And of course, this is the glorious thing that's evolved as we are getting very proficient with Zoom and all of these online platforms, that we can sort of bring the world in, which is a lovely thing.
And it makes things much more affordable. You don't have to get on planes or rent hotels in order to get the community and the teachings that you're looking for.
Absolutely. And that means that people like myself can also make the courses more affordable too. I think it's really a wonderful thing.
Well, Joanne Reed Rodriguez, thank you so much for joining us today and for adding your 10 best spiritual books to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's archive of recommendations. It's been a joy to speak with you.
Oh, likewise, Sandy. And thank you for inviting me to be your guest. I've loved it.
Good. I'm glad. And for you at home, if you are looking for ways to sort the wheat from the chaff, there's so many spiritual books out there. It is really hard to know what's going to work for you and what isn't. But the No BS Spiritual Book Club does exist to help you. We try to sort the wheat from the chaff by talking to people like this week's guest, Joanne, and getting their recommendations, the books that meant the most to them on their spiritual journey. So if you're looking for recommendations from the authors, teachers, speakers, and others who have walked this path before you, check out our free 10 best spiritual books archive at the NoBSSpiritualBookClub.com, where you can also view previous episodes of these face-to-face with live interviews. And you can sign up to save your space at future live stream events as well. So we'll send you reminders of these so you don't have to miss any. And while you're on the website, if you feel you have a book in you, but you don't know how to start getting it out of your head and into your hands, click on the Work With Me tab and find out how my experience helping others birth their books may be what you've been looking for. That brings us to the end of this week's show, which will also be available on all the major podcast platforms and on YouTube. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'll be back next week with another 10 Best Spiritual Books interview. Till then, it's goodbye from me.